Unit 5. Part 1. Language Skills Development. 1. Starter. B. Listen to a passage and answer the following questions.
Police solve 23-year-old murder case. More than two decades after an Austin woman was found severely injured in her apartment, police are charging her ex-boyfriend with murder. Officials closed the 1985 murder case of then 38-year-old Austin resident Natalie Antonetti. On October the 13th, 1985, Austin police were called to investigate an assault on a victim who was later identified as Antonetti. At about 5:15 a.m., Antonetti's roommate said she found her attacked and on the couch, bleeding from her head. Police said EMS transported Antonetti to the hospital, where she died 18 days later from head injuries resulting from the attack. The initial investigation went cold after authorities said they were unable to charge a suspect in this case. However, the case was re-examined in 2007 by the Cold Case Unit. In the examination, police said they followed up on an anonymous tip that was received that year. The 2007 tip produced more leads, which ultimately led to the charge of one of Antonetti's ex-boyfriends. Some 23 years later, the case was presented to a grand jury on June the 10th and resulted in a charge for first-degree murder against Dennis Davis. Though Davis was previously interviewed at the time of the murder, he was never listed as a suspect. Police said he is currently in custody awaiting a hearing. 2. Text. Unknown sister.
Lindsay, sitting on the couch in her living room, turned on the 5 o'clock news channel. Supposedly, new evidence has been found identifying a person connected to a 4-year-old robbery case in Portland, Oregon, and a fingerprint was able to be matched with one of the perpetrators at the last crime scene. Reporting from Channel 10 news scrolls across the TV screen in bold letters. A picture was shown on the screen, identified by the fingerprint. Lindsay looked at the photo and went into shock, because it was her, or her twin sister Sarah, being accused of the robberies. Lindsay and Sarah were identical twin sisters, and their personalities were the only key to telling one from the other. Lindsay was quiet and conservative, while Sarah enjoyed partying with her friends. Sarah was killed last year in a car accident. She was hit by a drunk driver and died instantly before the paramedics arrived on the scene. Furthermore, Lindsay had been getting these strange dreams recently at night, in which she was the perpetrator. Some dreams involved her robbing an elderly couple in broad daylight of their vehicle and expensive jewels. Other dreams involved her torturing and burning an old man on his chest and face with an iron pipe as he was tied to his bed in his home. Lindsay was unclear as to why she was having these images, nor did she know where these crimes had taken place. She replayed the broadcast message in her mind, and wondered if her images and the robberies had any connection. "Hello, Mom. Did you see the picture of me or Sarah on the news a few minutes ago?" Lindsay asked in a slow tone of voice. "Yes, honey. Why is your photo on the news?" "It's not me, Mom. It's Sarah. I've never lived nor stayed in Portland, Oregon." Lindsay hung up the phone before her mom could say another word. She realized that an extensive search on her part was going to be required to remove herself from the case. Moreover, she was going to have to locate the place Sarah was living in 4 years ago, around the time of the crimes. Lindsay drove over to Sarah's home in search of anything left behind linking her with the Portland area. Her home was still the same, because their mom kept it after Sarah passed away. Lindsay entered the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen. The living room looked very clean. Lindsay was with Sarah when she bought the home, and it seemed weird walking back into the home without her sister around. Lindsay wasn't surprised at the neatness and cleanness of the rooms. She looked shocked as she entered the bathroom, which was a mess, with trash on the tiled floor and a dirt ring around the tub. Next, Lindsay walked into her sister's bedroom and saw her bras and panties thrown on the bed and floor, with an unplugged TV sitting by her waterbed. Lindsay proceeded back into the kitchen and found Sarah's address book on the counter. She found three numbers with Oregon area codes, which were for two female friends and an ex-boyfriend named Johnny. Lindsay took a chance and spoke with both women, who agreed to meet with Lindsay the following day at their homes once she arrived. The following day, Lindsay boarded the first flight out to Portland and arrived at a hotel near the airport. Once she checked in, she immediately called both women to confirm the meeting for that afternoon. Lindsay took a cab over to the first young woman's home and spoke with her for about an hour, and then she left and went to the other woman's home. She was given pictures and took notes on some of their conversations. Lindsay took a cab out into town and did some shopping and sightseeing for a few hours. Later, she returned to the hotel and rested for the meeting with Johnny the next day. She arrived at the restaurant near the hotel the next morning. Lindsay was there 15 minutes early to gather her thoughts and to prepare herself for the initial conversation with Johnny. A young man walked into the restaurant, needing more sleep by the look on his face. His clothes looked worn, and his sneakers were covered in mud, and his hair was all over his head. Lindsay knew that this wasn't Johnny, because he wasn't the type of guy that her sister was attracted to. Nevertheless, the young man sat across from Lindsay at the table, introducing himself as Johnny. She was intrigued by his willingness to express his feelings and the relationship he had with Sarah. He also spoke about the robberies, saying that Sarah went with him on three of the four crimes. He mentioned that she hadn't been scared. She had taken it as a thrill. Johnny gave her a few pictures of him and Sarah at his apartment when she lived in Portland. Lindsay noticed how he fumbled with the zipper on his coat for the majority of their conversation. Afterward, she and Johnny went in their separate directions as if they didn't know each other. Lindsay could see why her sister had stayed in the area for a long period of time. It was beautiful compared to their hometown of Churchland, where nothing ever happened. Lindsay returned to her hotel room later that day to pack her things to return to Churchland the following morning. In addition, she was looking forward to going back home because she had her proof and had finished her investigation. The following day, she called her mom and gave her the details of her trip. However, she couldn't help feeling her mom was hiding information from her tone on the phone. Early the next morning, Lindsay went to the police department to speak with someone in charge of the 4-year-old case. She was escorted to two detectives in a small room, only dimly lit. Lindsay was anxious, going ahead with the papers she had in her hands. Both men were intrigued by the extensive time, effort, and money Lindsay had put into clearing her name. She was sure that she would be eliminated from the case due to the proof she handed to the detectives, not knowing the detectives would have a different story for her. She went on to tell the detectives that her twin sister Sarah had been killed in a car accident the year before. "Your sister Sarah is alive, and your mother is with her downstairs with a police officer waiting to speak with us," replied Detective Ames. "You're lying to me. I was there and saw my sister in her coffin before she was buried. I helped pay for her tombstone," Lindsay answered in an angry tone of voice. She moved herself to another chair in the corner of the small room and put her head in her hands. A knock at the door, and Sarah and their mom walked into the room. Lindsay was shocked, looking at her sister standing there with a disturbed look on her face. She looked nice in a black pantsuit, and her hair was draped around her face. Their mom wore a pair of blue jeans and a tan sweatshirt, and her hair was pulled back from her face in a ponytail. Neither detective could believe that Sarah had anything to do with the robberies that had taken place in Portland, Oregon. When Lindsay saw her sister and mom, she knew the detectives weren't going to believe her story after all. She didn't understand how they couldn't believe that her sister had died when there had to be a report from the autopsy done after her death. Lindsay felt betrayed by her family, and she knew that her instinct had been right when she felt that her mom was hiding information the previous day. Both women turned and looked at Lindsay with disappointment, as if she had just made up the entire story. Lindsay knew very well that the detectives wanted to solve the case and get it off their desks. Finally, without further ado, Lindsay was handcuffed and charged with the robberies having taken place in Portland. She was escorted to the jail nearby for booking. Lindsay went to court, and the jury found her guilty of all the robberies, and she was sentenced to 15 years in prison. The police were happy to have solved this case and to have the right twin in prison, but the sister that should have been in prison was neither Lindsay nor Sarah. Their mom had given birth to triplets, and the woman the police had tried to put behind bars was in fact another sister, Cindy.
New words.
Robbery.
Perpetrator.
Crime.
Scroll.
Bold.
Accuse.
Identical.
Personality.
Conservative.
Paramedic.
Torture.
Weird.
Mess.
Tile.
Tub.
Bra.
Panties.
Unplug.
Proceed.
Cab.
Initial.
Sneaker.
Intrigued.
Thrill.
Fumble.
Zipper.
Proof.
Escort.
Detective.
Dim.
Eliminate.
Coffin.
Tombstone.
Disturbed.
Pantsuit.
Drape.
Tan.
Sweatshirt.
Ponytail.
Autopsy.
Betray.
Ado.
Handcuff.
Guilty.
Triplet.
Proper nouns.
Lindsay.
Portland.
Oregon.
Sarah.
Johnny.
Churchland.
Ames.
Cindy.
Part 2. Language in use. 1. Short essay. How to conduct an interview with your witnesses. Suppose you are a lawyer and a friend of Lindsay. You want to help her find out the truth and plan to meet some witnesses. Here are some tips for your interview. Read and listen to the tips and answer the following questions.
Tell the witnesses who you are. When interviewing witnesses, tell them who you are and who you represent. When dealing with the witness, a lawyer cannot state or imply that he is disinterested. Is this the witness's first interview? Find out who else has interviewed the witness. Also, find out if he has given a recorded or sworn statement. If so, ask him for a copy. If he doesn't have one, let him know he's entitled to one. Once he receives it, ask him to forward you a copy. Put the witness at ease. Being interviewed by a lawyer can be fairly stressful. Try to put the witness at ease. If the witness is nervous, he'll be more expressive and reveal more information. Ask open-ended questions. To keep the discussion going and to gather as much information as possible, ask open-ended questions. You want to learn everything this witness knows about your case. Repeat the witness's own words to avoid misunderstanding. Repeat back to the witness any significant statement he makes to make sure you understand it properly. Find out about other witnesses. Find out what other witnesses may exist and ask for their names, telephone numbers, and addresses. Uncover any bias. Try to uncover any biases that may exist. Is this witness related to anyone in the case? Are they friends at all? Co-workers?
New words.
Conduct. Conduct.
Imply.
Disinterested.
Sworn.
Stressful.
Open-ended.
Bias.
Co-worker.
2. Pair work. An interview with your witness. Reference answer. I'm the lawyer representing Lindsay. Could you answer some questions about this case?
Yes, but I don't know what I can... What do you want to know?
Take it easy. Your words will help a lot. Could you tell me something about your meeting with Lindsay?
Yes, she came to meet me for some information about my ex-girlfriend, and I told her all I know.
Did Lindsay have a lot in common with your ex-girlfriend?
At the first sight, they were almost the same, but after a while, I knew they were different. How to say...
You said they were different. Does it mean Lindsay was not the person whom you committed robberies together with?
Absolutely not. I have told you they are different. Lindsay is not my girl.
Thank you. You've really helped a lot.
3. Text. How to write a good survey.
Words are often used in different ways by different people. Your goal is to write questions that each person will interpret in the same way. A good question should be short and straightforward. A questionnaire should be short in plain English, and the questions should be easy to answer. Only through careful writing, editing, review, and rewriting can you make a good questionnaire. The following provides you with guidelines for conducting your surveys. Write a short questionnaire. Above all, your questionnaire should be as short as possible. When drafting your questionnaire, make a mental distinction between what is essential to know, what would be useful to know, and what is unnecessary. Retain the former, keep the useful to a minimum, and discard the rest. If the question is not important enough to be included in your report, it probably should be eliminated. Use simple words. Survey recipients may have a variety of backgrounds, so use simple language. For example, what is the frequency of your automotive travel to your parents' residence in the last 30 days? Is better understood as, about how many times in the last 30 days have you driven to your parents' home? Assure a common understanding. Write questions that everyone will understand in the same way. Don't assume that everyone has the same understanding of the facts or a common basis of knowledge. Identify even commonly used abbreviations to be certain that everyone understands. Start with interesting questions. Start the survey with questions that are likely to sound interesting and attract the respondent's attention. Save the questions that might be difficult or threatening for later. Voicing questions in the third person can be less threatening than questions voiced in the second person. For example, ask, "How do your colleagues feel about management?" rather than, "How do you feel about management?" Don't write leading questions. Leading questions demand a specific response. For example, the question, "Which day of the month is best for the newly established company-wide monthly meeting?" leads respondents to pick a date without first determining if they even want another meeting. Don't make the list of choices too long. If the list of answer categories is long and unfamiliar, it is difficult for respondents to evaluate all of them. Keep the list of choices short. Avoid difficult recall questions. People's memories are increasingly unreliable as you ask them to recall events farther and farther back in time. You will get far more accurate information from people if you ask, "About how many times in the last month have you gone out and seen a movie in a movie theater or a drive-in?" rather than, About how many times last year did you go out and see a movie in a movie theater or a drive-in? Use closed questions rather than open-ended ones. Most questionnaires rely on questions with a fixed number of response categories from which respondents select their answers. These are useful because the respondents know clearly the purpose of the question and are limited to a set of choices where one answer is right for them. An open-ended question is a written response question. For example, if you do not want a company picnic, please explain why. If there are an excessive number of written response questions, it reduces the quality and attention the respondents give to the answers. Put your questions in a logical order. The issues raised in one question can influence how people think about subsequent questions. It is good to ask a general question and then ask more specific questions. For example, you should avoid asking a series of questions about a free banking service and then a question about the most important factors in selecting a bank. Name your survey. Some people discard an electronic message based entirely on its subject or sender. You should consider titles that will pique the interest of the recipients. Here are examples of survey names that might be successful in getting attention. Memo from the Chief Executive Officer. Evaluation of services of the Benefits Office. Your opinion about financial services. 3. T-shirt. Win a trip to Paris. Please respond by Friday. Free subscription. Win a notebook computer. Cover memo or introduction. Once a recipient opens your survey, you may still need to motivate him or her to complete it. The cover memo or introduction offers an excellent place to provide the motivation. A good cover memo or introduction should be short and include purpose of the survey, why it is important to hear from the correspondent, what may be done with the results and what possible impact the results may have, address identification, person to contact for questions about the survey, due date for response.
New words.
Straightforward.
Questionnaire.
Guideline.
Distinction.
Discard.
Recipient.
Frequency.
Automotive.
Residence.
Abbreviation.
Respondent.
Threatening.
Company-wide.
Category.
Unreliable. Excessive.
Logical.
Subsequent.
Peak.
Evaluation.
Subscription.
Motivate.
Proper nouns.
Chief Executive Officer.
Benefits Office.